Welcome to Orphans No More, a radio extension of Justice for Orphans Ministry, a program dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, advocating Christian families to adopt and get involved with foster care here in the Capital District, as well as globally, and encouraging and supporting those who've heard and heeded the call of James 1:27.
For he chose us in him before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. In love, he predestined us for adoption to sonship through Jesus Christ in accordance with his pleasure and will. That is Ephesians 1, verses 4 through 5. This show is part 2 of our conversation with Washington State adoptive mom, Vinita Thomas, and her two children, both adopted from India, Vinita's son, Sandeep, who is now 25, and her daughter, Ruth, who is now 19. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you, Sandra.
I don't even think I introduced myself. I'm your host, Sandra Flack of Justice for Orphans. In part one, Sandeep, you shared your tragic story of seeing your birth mom take her own life. And in the Indian culture, that event made you unwanted, an orphan. Nobody wanted you because of the bad karma they believed was associated with that. But you were chosen to be a son by Peter and Vinita Thomas. But that earlier trauma had done its damage. Would you share with us how you felt in those early days, first being adopted and coming to the States, and what that adjustment was like for you?
Yeah, definitely. It was a huge adjustment for me. I think coming here when I was 6 years old and coming to a new country, having to learn a new language, had new parents, new culture here. So it was kind of a shocking experience for me to get adjusted here. And you know, I didn't even know English either, so communication was tough, and I still had all these horrible memories in my mind about the tragic incident that took place with my mother, and suddenly I'm brought here. So it took quite a while for me to settle in and to get comfortable even with my parents. I remember times where, you know, my mom actually had to quit her job just to stay home and spend some time, all of her time with me, just helping me learn and bringing me up to speed with where I should have been at my level for school. And making sure that she spent time teaching me and talking to me about what happened. And she asked a lot of questions, and just for her to get familiar with my story and so that she could just understand me better. But, you know, the beginning years were very difficult. I think along with the fact that we also didn't have any support or much support from family and friends, I think it left us on a very lonely journey when I was adopted. And I remember, you know, I used to get very angry at my mother and at God whenever they, you know, whenever my parents told me about Jesus as being a loving father. And constant questions I used to ask was like, you know, why me? Why as a 5-year-old did I have to go through all these things? Why was I ripped away from my family? Why did I have to see my mother die? And so those are the questions that continue to build up. And I think the anger was directed towards my mother primarily because, you know, she was the person that was in the closest contact with me and showed me the most love at this point in my life. And so I showed her the most hate, and I was more rebellious in these early years towards her because I was just taking out my anger and frustration on the person that loved me the most, which was her. And that continued to build for many years after that, and it went on into school, where, you know, I just bad behavior in school and getting in trouble and not learning and hanging out with a bad crowd and making bad decisions. I wasn't able to think logically because I think the trauma really affected my brain and just my ability to think and to make decisions. You know, I'd lie consistently, and I'd always triangulate my parents. So I'd make my mom the target of this game and complain about the things that she was doing or saying to my dad when he got home from work. And it just made them out to look like really bad parents. But on the other hand, you know, while all this was going on in the house, on the outside, people had no idea because I just appeared to be like this good, quiet child that obeyed his parents and did what he was told. And so people got a very different perspective of what was actually happening in the household because I was appeared to be really good on the outside. And, you know, and so that, you know, we couldn't really go out and tell people, hey, or my parents couldn't go out and tell people, hey, pray for us because this is what's happening, because nobody really believed that that was what was actually happening in the house. So this increased year after year, my bad behavior and my rebellion and my anger. And I think it ultimately came, you know, and it came to a point where later on, my parents were really at wit's end. They even felt like they had to, you know, cut the adoption out and send me back to India. Mm. And those are some tough decisions that they were thinking through in the later part of the years.
Yeah, because now this was back in the time, and we were talking about this earlier before we started the broadcast, but nowadays, families, adoptive and foster families, have access and education in the area of parenting children who have trauma histories. But back then, there were no resources. There wasn't no one knew how to do this. We didn't understand that it was like PTSD. You know, all of these things were going on and there wasn't help. There wasn't resources. Nobody really understood. Thankfully, today, those things are available to parents. But Vinita, how did you get through all of that? How, share with us how Sandeep's behavior impacted your family.
So it was hard to say the least. And again, as I mentioned, we've talked before, without understanding trauma, it was very difficult. We were just correcting behaviors too. And it was like lying, you know, why would this child lie? It was so obvious he was lying. And we would discipline him for the lying. And really today we know there are underlying reasons for that and which we need to deal with. And he had faced so much of separation, so much of loss, so much, you know, the feeling of being unwanted. He was just reacting out of that pain. And the effect was probably the most on Ruth. She was 6 years younger than him. She adored him as an older brother and he was very good to her. But the two of them were constantly together. You know, she wanted to do everything that he did, but I also had to spend hours with him. Sometimes in the evening, just to cope with schoolwork, I would sit 5 to 6 hours with him. And if I stopped, we'd have to restart from the beginning because his brain couldn't continually function. And so Ruth would just be out there. We didn't have much support during those days. I think part of it was our own struggle of, you know, fear of what people are going to say. We were new parents. We were afraid of being judged. And again, because it looked like it was bad behavior. And it looked like we didn't know how to train him up to be a good kid. But through it all, you know, I had also been a working woman. And now I was home with him, with both the kids, as a stay-at-home mom, probably working 100 times harder than most other moms might have had to. I'm not saying all, but some. And not getting any results at the end of it. So as the years went on, I was falling apart. My husband was working in New York City. This is the internet boom time. So he had very long hours. He was not available. And I was just beginning to collapse under the stress and strain of this whole venture. And it came to a point where we were at a wedding in California. An uncle of mine saw this. And he said, you're not going to make it. And he actually volunteered and said, I will take Sandeep for a few months and keep him and homeschool him and help you out here. You go back and think through and make some decisions. And we did just that. We went back to New Jersey. My husband was actually in a fairly good executive management position at New York. He just realized he needed to be closer to home to help Sandeep because Sandeep was already 12. And at this point, he just gave up that job. We moved across the country literally overnight to Washington State just so he could be closer to Sandeep. And, he, you know, it was a critical point. Being a boy, he needed his dad nearby. And God's grace, we were here. And we thought, you know, those 8 months would help Sandeep. I think all it did was give us a break. Mm-hmm. And we are very grateful to that uncle who did that for us because we didn't know anything about respite care. But he had provided that. But every year, the anger and the pain that he experienced increased. And he was not an aggressive kid. He was passive aggressive. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what we said to him. It didn't matter what we did. He just didn't care. He was like the walking dead. Wow. But he just would not do anything. And even his anger, years later, he said he needed so much of brain power to even suppress the memory of his mother's death, which was a constant replay in his brain. And that was a big struggle for him. And because of that, he couldn't study. So we were constantly finding new ways, new schools. We moved him from public school to private school to homeschool, you know, and ultimately, by God's grace, virtual school. And that is where we kind of found a way through. But it was a constant journey of adjustments and readjustments, trying to help him. And this was just to cope with life, not even to thrive.
So Sandeep, go ahead.
Oh, and of course, you know, the impact on Ruth and then later on our youngest bio daughter, Sarah, who was born into this, you know, both these girls, all they knew was Sandeep's trauma and the stress and strain. When mom is not happy, the family's not happy.
That's true.
So it did affect all of them. But, you know, and so that's why when we look back, we just see it is God having his hand on us. There's no other explanation.
Yeah. So Sandeep, though, by the time you were in ninth grade, your parents were considering sending you back to a boarding school in India, but instead they sent you on a missions trip. So tell us how your life began to turn around. Where did the hope in the healing begin?
Yeah, definitely. So they made us, they were planning to send me back to India, and actually got in contact with a school there. So they're, you know, and they're seriously considering that as an option. But I think God opened the doors to an organization called Teen Missions, where they send, you know, teenagers to different parts of the world on a 2-month mission trip. And so, you know, I had to fundraise and we did all of that. And I was actually going to Zambia and I was going to spend 2 months over there with 18 other teenagers just serving and taking care of orphans there. And during that time, also, my grandmother put together a prayer team for about 6 months. And she would send constant updates about how I was doing, what they could specifically be praying for me for. And that continued on the side as well. And so I went. And I think the hope was that I'd go and I'd, you know, really look at my life in perspective and really thank and appreciate God for what he's done in my life and saving me from, you know, the past trauma and bringing me to where I am today. And but I think when I came back, it had the reverse effect. I had just spent 2 months away by myself. I was independent. So I came back thinking that I could, you know, take on life by myself. And I actually came back more angry and more rebellious as it showed up in the year to come. So when I came back, I think that was literally the worst year that we had gone through, because that was the year that I ran away from home. I threatened to take my own life, and I even got caught by the cops. And that was the incident where God really changed my heart. You know, I took the car out without a license and actually got pulled over by the cops. And ended up lying to them about having my license as well. And so they called my parents. And in that incident, my parents came up and, you know, the cops told them what had happened and all that. And, you know, I had to take, this was my grandfather's car, and he didn't know anything about that. So when they returned back from their trip, you know, I went to apologize to my grandpa and for taking out his car. And he asked me during that time, you know, I was wearing a camp t-shirt, which had a Bible verse on it. And he just asked, you know, how can you wear a shirt like that and live the life that you're living? Those two don't go hand in hand. And so that made me think. And keep in mind also, you know, I was born in this, I was adopted into this family where I received biblical teaching pretty much every single day. We went to church, we did family devotions, there was constant prayer and love from my parents. And they always told me about Jesus and relationship that I could have with him and that I should accept him into my heart. And but none of that changed until God intervened and really opened my eyes to the truth. And that's where I understood the gospel. You know, the fact that I was adopted and brought into this family, and Jesus does the same thing for me when I go to him and I accept this free gift that he's given me. And so that later that week, I you know, I called my parents and that's where I accepted Christ. And I think from that point onwards, it was very specific changes that began to show in my life, all thanks to God. And just my attitudes changed. My perspective on my adoption changed also. And I got a new meaning for, you know, why these things happened. They were painful things, yes, but, you know, God allowed them for a reason. And if he did, and I am here today because of those things that had happened, there's probably a far bigger reason or a far bigger plan that God has in mind for me to go through all these things to bring me to where I am today.
Incredible. So let me hear from Ruth. With all of this turmoil going on in your home, how did that affect your growing up?
For me, I really hero worshipped Sandeep. I was his tail, his shadow. I would follow him along wherever he went. He was my best friend. And when he became a Christian and started making changes, like telling the truth and whatnot, I felt left behind. I felt like, again, someone had abandoned me. And that made me really angry. Not angry at him, but angry at God that he would cause my best friend to suddenly change. I started to make my own decisions and really walk away from what my parents had taught me. And during this time, we actually brought in my great-grandmother, who lived with us for 2 years. And she was towards the end of her life that I really started to take on more responsibility of her personal care. And when she passed away, I was 13, and when she passed away, that feeling of loss and abandonment once again hit, because I felt like she really understood me. I mean, she didn't say much. She was a woman of very few words, but she had such a heart for Jesus and just a spirit of caring. And just the way that she was, just really something about her just drew me to love her. And she was also my friend. But when she passed away, I just suddenly felt all alone. So I had feelings of running away, of I was continually angry at my parents because all of a sudden my brother got religious and got Jesus and whatnot. And for me, I knew that what he had was great and amazing, but I couldn't let myself be swayed by, you know, by this love that he had found. Because I think that Sandeep hit it on the head before. Understanding God as a father to the fatherless was extremely hard for me because I don't know anything about my history. I could not see God as a father. My adoptive father has always been there for me. He's always been steady and constant. But understanding the fact, I always used to almost glorify my first family and demonize my adoptive family. That was a big thing for me. I would make everything that my birth mother, or things that I knew about my first mother, seem amazing, while in reality, my adoptive parents, my parents actually, were the ones who were daily caring for me and fighting for me and loving me, and pursuing me. So this whole thing had a really big impact on the way that it was affecting my behaviors, and this was also a time when I found my mom was clearing out her drawer, and she never intended me to see these pictures, but they were pictures of my sister's ultrasound when my parents found out that they were having a baby. And I saw those pictures, and I immediately, again, my mind went to, where's my first family? Why don't I have pictures? Where's my records? What are the answers? You claim that you're God, that you have everything in control, while I want answers and I want it now. Not knowing that answers are not always what is needed in that moment, that there are times that answers are not helpful, and there are times that you just need to trust God. And I think through this time, God was teaching me that you need to surrender. You really need to give all of your control to me. Control was a major issue. I believe that I know for a fact, actually, that I used lying as a major way to manipulate my way around situations. I thought that I was in control when that happened, that I could control the way that I went, control how long it went for. And if somebody found out, so what? Start a new one. It wasn't that big a deal. So my parents were continually just telling me that, you know, that lying doesn't do any good, that it hurts you more than anyone, that it's destructive. Mm. But they never gave up, and I'm really, really grateful for that. But it was really tough those years. It was the darkest time of all.
And how long has it been since you did surrender your life to the Lord?
It's actually just been a year.
Wow.
So I struggled from really onwards from 10, 11, but officially 13, up until 18. And I put my parents through the ringer. But they didn't stop fighting no matter what. So it proves that that God still can do miracles.
That's right. He's in the miracle business. And
Vinita,
your family walked through such difficult and dark and lonely road over those 19 years. And like Ruth said, you know, you were put through the ringer. Was it worth it?
I think going back, I just want to read a quote which I read in my Bible study just this week. And it said, salvation was gained for us only by the suffering of Jesus Christ himself. And submission was modeled for us by Jesus as he suffered to provide that salvation. So we are called to accept his precious gift of salvation and be willing to imitate his submission and step into suffering, looking to the future eternal glory that is set before us. And Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings to us closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So I would say absolutely, but it's only because of Jesus. Adoption is one of the most difficult journeys in our experience, but it's also been one of the most amazing adventures. And we know we could do it only because Jesus had already suffered for us and he empathized with us and he was there with us. He had promised never to leave us or forsake us. And yes, there were times when it felt like God had abandoned us and we were broken, we were lost, we felt lonely. And those are very dark times. But I think looking back now, he held on to us even when we could not see it. And we got to experience him in a very different way had we not stepped into this. So my encouragement is whether or not our adopted or foster children respond to our love efforts on this earth, I think what we need to remember is that each of us as adopted parents or foster parents has been handpicked by God, specially chosen instruments used for his purposes and for his glory. We are broken vessels, but we reflect his glory. And I think that makes it worth it. And it's also God reminds us in his word that it's not all about this life alone. But we do have an eternity with him. And there are eternal rewards for us to look forward to, even as we have walked in the trenches with our kids. So absolutely.
Well, amen to all of what you just said. And as we wrap up here today, we just have a couple of minutes left. But I want to give both Sandeep and Ruth an opportunity to answer the question I had posed to Vinita last week in part one. So I'll give you both a chance to share this. And it's, what do you really want our listeners to take away from our conversation today? What do you want them to know?
So a few things. For parents, I want them to know that they need to keep fighting and pursuing their child. 18 is not a magical number in the Bible. Just because that's what the law is, that they can make their own decisions, that is not a biblical number. There's no limit to how much you can pursue your child. Jesus went to the cross in order to pursue us. So we should be willing, parents should be willing to pursue their children at any cost. Another thing was, look beyond the what your child is doing to the why they are doing it. Because if you look to what they're doing, it'll be behavior modification. But if you look to the why, you can understand why they're doing it at a heart level, and then pray over your child and help them spiritually. And then push for family devotions. Yes, one-on-one devotions is important and whatnot, but also doing it as a family can also, I think it makes a statement that there is no, there's no space and no stronghold for Satan to take control when a family is united and together. For adoptees, don't bite the hand that feeds you. Don't fight with your adoptive parents. They love you so much. They have chosen you. You are loved so dearly. Be grateful for everything that you've been given, but remember that your gratitude can only stem out of your love for Jesus. If you do not have a love for Jesus, there's no reason for you to be grateful, because you're going to see your adoption in a negative light. Always be willing to serve others. You've been saved from so much. There are so many other kids out there who don't get the opportunities you do, who are still without a family. And then share your story. There are so many that need to hear. You can be a voice for those who don't have a voice. But in order for you to do that, you really have to be strong in the Word of God. So just stay strong. Trust Jesus, and know that you may not get your answers here, but he has a much bigger plan waiting for you.
Yeah. And I'll just add to that real quick. I think for adoptees specifically, and I empathize with your story, and I know it's tough, and I understand that, but I want to encourage you with two things. I think the first and foremost thing is to have gratitude for your adoption. Ruth alluded to this. There are millions of other orphans out there that probably will never know what the word adoption means, but you've been adopted, and so you have a bigger calling and purpose in life. And then the second thing I'd say is forgive the past and those that have hurt you. This was critical for me, because as long as I was angry and I hated those that hurt me, I was really being controlled by that. So I really had to learn to forgive the past and the people that really affected my life in the beginning. And the other thing I'd say is don't let the things in your life and the struggles become an excuse for why your life isn't moving forward. At the end of the day, the playing field is even, and no one's going to give you in life, no one's going to give you an extra leg up just because of the struggles that you've gone through when we become adults. So we can't give that as an excuse for not moving on with our lives. You know, I'm married now. I have to assume all the responsibilities of a family and taking care of my kids in the future and my parents on both sides. But you know, there's no excuse that I have for not doing those things. It's understandable if there are real disabilities, and I understand that. But oftentimes, I think we use our life circumstances as an excuse for wasting the opportunities that are before us. And for parents, I'd say continue to push your children. Oftentimes it's we just need a little prodding and pushing to just gear us in the right direction. And we don't want to ever, for adoptees, we don't want to ever use what we've gone through as an excuse for not doing better in our life, because God expects more of us.
Well, thank you.
Your adoption doesn't define you. It explains where you're from, but it definitely doesn't define you.
Yeah.
It's one more thing.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you all, Vanita, Sandeep, and Ruth, for joining us today. Thank you, our listeners. And to find out more, you can visit our website at justicefororphansny.org.
Thank you for supporting this program by listening today, sharing what you've heard, and praying for orphans and children in need everywhere. More information is available at justicefororphansny.org. Visit and discover how you can make a difference in a child's life. And be sure to tune in to Orphans No More next Friday.